Streaming 24/7.
Oh my God, it's better than I thought.
This is Radio Influence.
You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello, everybody. This is Ian Beckles, and welcome back to In the Trenches. First and foremost, I want to give some love to our title sponsor, Hess Spinal Centers. A lot of people get into car accidents, and it's stressful on you and your family. Don't stress. Call Hess. And basically, from beginning to end, when you have a car accident, you got to just call up Hess. They have 16 locations here in the area, 1-800-618-HESS. That's 1-800-618-HESS. Hess, they provide the best medical care for your family in this trying times, and it really can be stressful. Do yourself a favor and call my people at Hess Spinal Centers. Now, Sunday was the first weekend or first day without football. It was kind of weird. You know, find myself watching silly movies like Son-in-Law and cross-country skiing, and that didn't exactly fill the void. But it is life after football now, but In the Trenches will continue because there's stuff happening all around us when it comes to the NFL. Free agency's around the corner. The combine's around the corner. There's a lot of guys getting signed here and there, coaches. And I'm going to give my top 10. I get asked this question a lot. Who are the toughest defensive linemen you played against? And I'm going to give my top 10. And, you know, we'll compare them to whoever you want to. Because at times I get mocked for questioning other people's performance. And you can compare these names to whoever I'm mocking and see if he plays anything like that. I didn't even bring up a name. How about that? All right, life after football, but things are going on as far as free agency. We talked last week with the Jimmy Garoppolo signing, 5 years, $137.5 million. Had a discussion just the other day at a bar at a watering hole, and somebody says, nobody's worth that much money. And I disagreed. If you're getting paid that much money, then you're worth it. If Jimmy Garoppolo was out in the free agent market, he might have made more than that. Very possible. So if somebody's going to pay you that much money, then you are worth it, period. John Lynch thought he was worth it. And that's just a going rate. He's the highest paid player in the NFL, not because he's the best, just because he was the latest to be signed. There's been a lot worse players than Jimmy Garoppolo be the highest paid player in the league just because it's that time for them, you know, for them to come up as far as their contract goes. So I'm happy for Jimmy Garoppolo. Whatever happens from here, I don't know. It just sure makes John Lynch look brilliant bringing the kid in during the season. I don't think he gave up much. I want to say he gave up a third rounder or something like that. So that's a pretty darn good signing. So you give up a third rounder for the ability to bid on Jimmy Garoppolo before free agency. So that definitely made a lot of sense for the 49ers. Now, they're going through some other stuff. Reuben Foster, a linebacker on their team, was busted less than a month ago with the Mary Jane. And then he got busted just last night or the night before for domestic abuse. So, once again, it puts John Lynch in a very tough position when you have somebody getting arrested twice within a month. Probably is not going to work out in the long run. And you don't want to just cut ties sometimes, but when you talk about domestic abuse, I think you have to send a message out there to the players on your team. And, you know, anybody that's listening, that I have zero tolerance. In these trying times and, you know, what's going on in our government, a lot of it's very disgusting. I was talking about that yesterday on my show on 102.5, what's going on with the president and his right-hand man and the domestic abuse and how our president is backing him. Not me, okay? You put your hands on a woman, I ain't backing you. I don't think John Lynch is that type of guy either. So he's going to have to make some decisions with Mr. Reuben Foster here real quick. I would probably think he's going to get cut. And once you get cut in the offseason for silly-ass stuff like this, sometimes it's tough to get back on a football team. He'll probably, end up on somebody's roster, but you just cost yourself a whole lot of money, young man. The Colts found themselves a coach, Frank Reich. You remember Frank Reich back in the day had a 14-year career. You got to have, I mean, when you have your coach has played 14 years in the league as a quarterback, I think it has a built-in respect. You don't, your coach doesn't have to have played in the NFL to get respect. I played, I was around Bill Belichick, I was around Bill Parcells. Alex Gibbs was probably the best offensive line coach ever. Those guys, they might have played in college. I don't believe they played in the league. But knowledge is important. But for somebody like Frank Reich, who was the offensive coordinator for the Eagles, when you win a Super Bowl, what happens is people come picking at your players, and they come picking at your coaches and your front office people. So the Eagles are going to miss out on Frank Reich, but congratulations to him. Hopefully the Colts found the right guy. They got dissed by Josh McDaniels. You know, those kind of things hurt coaches in the long run. Like Josh McDaniels, you know, made them wait. And allegedly he said, I'm the guy. And then when it came to his time, he said, no, I decided not to do that. Now, from what I've heard through the grapevine, there's other coaches that Josh McDaniels was contacting that were ready to go coach with him in Indianapolis, and they were turning down other jobs. So that's not a good look for Josh McDaniels, for sure. So the next time he goes out looking for coaches, which is probably going to be in the next year or two, people are going to be leery. Now, here in the Tampa Bay area, we're not used to it. It's been a little while, but there was a time where Bill Parcells was coming here. And I remember because I was on the team. Bill Parcells was coming here. It was a rumor. He was going around looking for coaches. We were ready to go. And then I guess he pulled out. I don't know why. Don't know what happened. Marvin Lewis literally was calling his coaches and flying here to Tampa. And in the last second, it fell through. So this is something that's actually happened here in the Bay Area before. So, you know, would the Bucs have won more games if Bill Parcells was a coach way back when? Hell yeah. No doubt about that. Marvin Lewis, probably. Not quite as, you know, evident as Bill Parcells, because Bill Parcells didn't lose anywhere, pretty much. Now, the Buccaneers have some decisions to make in this offseason. Mike Evans, this is last year of his contract, his first contract. So he's going to be looking for an extension. Now, whether you give it to him now or not, that's up to you. You know, sometimes you're better off doing it during the season, because when you wait till after the season, then he becomes a free agent. You don't see a whole lot of receivers getting franchise tagged. You don't see a lot. And, you know, Mike Evans is crucial to this football team, that's for sure. Didn't have his best season last year. I still thought he was out there fighting through some injuries. Like to see him, I mean, at the end of the year, I could see he was banged up, but you still saw him out in the football field. I respect that. But it's the last year of his contract, so we're going to have to make some decisions. The Bucs have money. Lock the kid up. Lock him up. You got to believe that that's the future of this team. Like, a wide receiver is somebody who can play for five more years and contribute. Now, a running back, you know, Doug Martin, he's gone. I mean, by the end of the season when they were benching him, Doug Martin has averaged 2.9 yards a carry in the last 2 years. He made $6.75 million last year. Good for you, Doug. Congratulations. But when it comes to X's and O's and dollars and cents, those numbers don't equate. You got to do a lot more for $6.75 million and 2.9 yards a carry and getting benched at the end of the year and getting suspended and a bunch of dumb crap like that. Now, the draft is around the corner. We got a little while. The Bucs have the 7th pick. You know, everybody's already talking about that Saquon Barkley, the kid from Penn State. The kid can play. I like his attitude. I like his style. It's not conducive to a long NFL career. No way. It just doesn't work that way. You just don't see guys running that hard last very long in the NFL. You need a Le'Veon Bell, kind of a jumpy, swervy type of cat. And they still all get hurt, all of them. I would not use a 7th pick in the draft on a running back. I don't care how good or bad he looks. Go get me a great offensive lineman. I know Penn State has a nice one. There's a couple here and there. Notre Dame, I believe. Or get me a defensive lineman who can rush the passer. But you got to win this year. They got to win this year. If Dirk Cutter doesn't win next this year, he's gone. And so is Jason Light. I think they all know that. So if you go out and you get a defensive lineman, defensive linemen don't normally shine in the first year. They really don't. I mean, they're learning. They're trying to figure out the game. You know, Warren Sapp had to go through some growing pains. John Randall had to go through some growing pains. And those are Hall of Fame football players. So if you got to win this year, maybe defensive lineman is not the way. Go get me a good offensive lineman. A good offensive lineman can make a difference right away. Or a good receiver can make a difference right away. Or a defensive back. There's certain positions that just don't do that well as rookies. So, seventh pick in the draft, I would like to go inside somehow. You know, the strength of your team starts at the football, and then it goes out. So your center, your nose guard, that's the most important. If you're weak in the middle there, it just doesn't work. And like I said, it's great to have receivers, but if you're not blocking, we can't run the football. We didn't run the football worth a crap last year. We really didn't. And I don't know if that's, you know, more lean towards Dirk Cutter because it seemed like he went away from the run a lot. But to his defense, we ran the ball sometimes maybe too much on first down and end up at 2nd and 9 and 2nd and 8, and it's hard to call a football game that way. So, you know, we'll see what's going to happen here. Personally, I think if these guys want to keep their jobs, they got to make a splash in free agency. Just go look and see what Jacksonville did last year, and they went and spent a buttload of money to make their team better immediately, and that's what they did. So let's hope the Bucs get that done in free agency, and when the draft comes, you just draft the best available football player. When you're in a situation where you don't need something, that's when the draft can really help you as a football team. Now, I look around and I look and see, you know, different scoops here and there, and I see people's mock drafts. You won't ever see me do a mock draft. That's the dumbest shit I've ever seen in my life, do a mock draft in February before the combine and before free agency. That's the dumbest crap ever. Come on, stop it. You're just wasting your time, you're wasting ink, and you're wasting words, all right? Things are going to change 100 times between now, you know, and the draft. Free agency, to me, is the way to go. You look at it, I just was watching the NFL Network today, and they're talking about the Kansas City Chiefs. They have Tamba Ali, Derek Johnson, and Justin Houston are all going to be free agents. I'll take two of them cats right now. I'll take Houston, Derek Johnson, or Tamba Ali and get rid of who the hell RNs are. I don't even know who they are right now. Get rid of them. Bring me two veteran players with some attitude and some leadership. You know, free agency is 30 days away. That's not that long. It's enough time for, you know, Shelton Quarles and Jason Light to sit down and go get some veteran leadership. To me, that's essential. Attitude. You know, you saw Calais Campbell, you know, jump on that Jacksonville defense, and they're a different defense immediately. Jumping around, everybody's having fun, everybody's enjoying the game, and they're kicking ass too. So a pass rush, to me, is probably the most important thing going into the offseason. I think you can put together a good enough offensive line with what we have, although I'd like to see maybe another name surface in free agency would be nice. Now, the Bucs made a move. They fired their defensive line coach, Jay Hayes, who I don't know much about him. I guess he's fallen on it for everybody else. Personally, I didn't think the personnel was all that great. And so I don't know if that's Jay Hayes' fault. Through the grapevine, I guess a lot of the defensive linemen didn't like the fact that he ran a lot of stunts. You know, I don't mind a team running a lot of stunts, all right, if you know how to run a stunt. Because, you know, I had the conversation with Warren Sapp, like, right, I'm sitting in a Dignitary headquarters. We were right here talking about it. You can run stunts all day. But running stunts got to be a selfless thing where one guy has to give himself up, okay? You can't both run stunts and be rushing the passer at the same time. Warren Sapp and Simeon Rice and Brad Culpepper, all those guys ran stunts to death, and they were great at it. But they knew the concept. you know, when Warren Sapp is beating you on your outside shoulder all game long, and you're worried about that outside shoulder, then all of a sudden he pushes off your outside shoulder and then pushes the inside of a tackle, and here comes the end coming around. Nobody can block that guy. But one guy has to give himself up. Gerald McCoy is never going to give himself up. I've never seen that. So maybe stop running stunts with him. But when I hear defensive linemen complaining about systems and technique, you're supposed to do what the hell your coach tells you to do and how your coach tells you to do that. We don't have anybody on our defensive line that has enough pedigree to be complaining about anything. If you've never had double-digit sacks, do what the hell the coach tells you to do, and then do it hard, and that's it. If it doesn't work, put it on your coach. So there's a lot of, you know, inmates running the asylum. And once again, I don't know if anybody even warrants opening their big fat mouth, because there's just nobody out there on our defense, especially our defensive line, that's really ever accomplished anything. Think of our defense in general. Who on our defense has ever really accomplished anything? When I mean accomplished, that means taking their team to the playoffs. That means led the league in something, led your defense to some kind of ranking. We don't have anybody out there. Nobody. And we need some guys like that with that attitude that know what it's like to be playing in January, and we don't have enough of those guys on our defense. Now, I told you at the beginning I was going to give you my top 10 defensive linemen that I played against. And once again, I brought up Gerald McCoy. I'm going to bring up his name now because I do get people get on me for get riding him. It's because I've seen better. I know what greatness looks like. And when I sit there and I'm reading a lot of these social media things, a lot of people get on Gerald McCoy. It's not just me, and he's very sensitive about it, a lot. But I'm going to show you the caliber of people that I played against and maybe why I'm so critical of Mr. McCoy. From worst to first, and the worst is, doesn't mean they're the worst out there. Trust me, there are some pretty darn good names out there. Personally, I had problems with tall, long-armed defensive linemen. At times, a lot of trouble. Some of them long-armed, some bitches, you know, you can't get your hands on them. Frank Warren was a guy from the Saints. His nickname was Big. So if you're on a football team, your nickname is Big, you can kind of picture what he looks like. He kind of looked like Calais Campbell a little bit. Kind of a guy that you just don't want to really block a whole lot. He was a son of a bitch for the Saints. Keith Hamilton for the Giants was another guy who just gave me a rough, rough time. In the Giants stadium, I want to say he had 3 sacks on me, but we don't want to bring up some old stuff. Jumpy Gathers is a name that I brought up before. And if you're an offensive lineman, especially an interior guy, and you're my age, you're going to remember that name, Jumpy Gathers. I don't remember him ever being, you know, a big name guy, but as an offensive lineman, he was literally unblockable. He would stick his shoulder in your chest and almost pick you up off your feet. It was called a forklift. Nobody else has done it before him or after him. Nobody. But he would forklift anybody he wanted onto the quarterback, and that was his thing. Dennis Byrd gave me fits my rookie season. I came back and, you know, got back out of my second year. But Dennis Byrd, you know that name from a guy who broke his neck, and he passed away, actually, in some tragic accident. But Dennis Byrd broke his neck out in a football field while I was playing, and it was very sad because, you know, Dennis was actually a guy who, you know, was a good guy on the football field. And when you see somebody lying on the field like that, it was saddened. It was nice to see him come back and walk, but he's passed ever since. Jerry Ball, kind of a short, dumpy dude from the Lions. He couldn't have been more than 6 feet, probably 330 or so. Just didn't have a whole lot to put your hands on, and he was a stumpy son of a gun. Not an easy guy to move. My first career start, we started against Jerry Ball in Detroit. Jerry Ball was a nose guard, and Chris Spielman was a linebacker. And Tony Mayberry and myself started as rookies, and we had a fantastic game. Thank you for asking. I think we had 150 yards rushing and no sacks and no pressures. So those were the good old days, but they didn't last very long. Wayne Martin is another name from the Saints that I believe may be one of the most underrated players in the league. Like, he made the Pro Bowl quite a few years. I don't know how many, but he was one of those guys where you watched him on film he was just a beast out there everywhere he went. And long arm guy, just played real hard for the Saints. And that's when the Saints had like unbelievable defensive linemen and linebackers everywhere. Just they were a bitch to play anywhere, actually. Howie Long, I mean, I don't have to say a whole lot about Howie Long. Howie Long had a Hall of Fame-type career, played real hard, played real mean, and a gentleman out there, too. Not all these guys are gentlemen, by the way. Some of them are mean as a snake. Howie Long was a gentleman out there. Chester McLaughlin, who is in the Hall of Fame, I believe. I want to say he passed for some reason, but Chester McLaughlin, when he was playing for... I don't know, he played for the Raiders and maybe the Seahawks, but no, definitely for the Raiders. He was a guy who he would be on a football field and his football jersey just looked like a T-shirt. He was so big and mean and strong that, you know, this made for a very, very long day. So look up that name, Chester McLaughlin, for guys that were mean back in the day. John Randall, I mean, I've said this before. I think I played against John Randall 16 times. That's a lot. And he had more moves than anybody I've ever seen. You know, he would bull rush you, then spin you, then fake a spin, then rip you, then it was just too much. It was too much. And then number one on the list, and really should be number one on everybody's list, Reggie White, who I fought quite a few times and held my own, but that's a long day, okay? You better eat some. You better eat your breakfast when you're playing against Mr. Reggie White, because he too was a gentleman, but you had to respect him on the field at all times, because what you didn't want is for him to get pissed. Because I seen him get pissed with some people, and I didn't want that. Nobody wanted that. But all these guys right here, these 10 guys on the list, the one thing that they have in common is they made their teams better wherever they were. Like, you could put Reggie White, and that's why when people say Gerald McCoy needs somebody to help him, Reggie White, you put him anywhere on any team, that team becomes better immediately. You don't need anybody to help him. Howie Long doesn't need anybody. John Randall doesn't need anybody. They don't need anybody. If you're a great player, people become great around you. And that's what we're missing. We don't have a great player, especially on defense, I want to say, that nobody can embrace and say, that's our guy. Everybody watch him play. Watch his attitude, and everybody follows suit. We used to have Warren Sapp. We used to have Derek Brooks and John Lynch and Simeon Wright. Those are all names that were leaders in their own way. It's not really verbally, but just on the field, that's what they did. And they made everybody better. So we definitely need more leadership. I'm seeing some leadership going on with Jameis Winston and DeSean Jackson, who I heard are already working together. That's leadership that we need. At the end of the season, you heard some stuff said by DeSean Jackson that you didn't want to hear. Negative stuff that doesn't really help anybody. But when I hear Jameis Winston and DeSean Jackson are already starting to work with each other on timing, that makes me happy that they both give a crap. Because a lot of people can sit back and rest on your laurels. I don't think Jameis Winston's that type of guy. And I know Jameis Winston at the end of the season was sick to his stomach that his team went 5-11. I know he's sick to his stomach. He doesn't want that anymore, because it's getting to a point now where, you know, Jameis Winston has always been a winner. You mess around and lose this year, you become a loser. You've been in the league long enough that it's time for you to succeed, period. And, you know, nobody's going to say, well, Jameis Winston was a good quarterback, but he didn't have a supporting cast. Nobody's going to say that. Because it's your team. If you're a quarterback, it's your team, and you have to go out there and lead them, and that's it. So I don't think the Buccaneers are far off. 5-11 sounds far off. I don't know how far off they are. Maybe a couple offensive linemen, a couple defensive linemen, and they win 3 or 4 more games, possibly. That's not that easy. You know, Jason Light's going to have, you know, his hands full of going out there in free agency and finding the right pieces. You can't miss. Chris Baker, miss. Can't miss. Cannot. Can't spend that much money and not get anything out of it. We spent a lot of money and actually maybe went backwards. Clinton McDonald, I think, is a better player than Chris Baker. And, you know, you can't make those mistakes. Chris Baker, I'll be shocked if he's still on the team, to be honest with you. So stop making those type of mistakes. And from what happened there in Jacksonville last year, it's got to make you feel optimistic that things can turn around quickly. And as a Buccaneer fan, I think we're all ready for that. Because at the beginning of last year, boy, we were optimistic as hell that we were all going to the playoffs. That was the first year that I said we're going to the playoffs, and I was wrong, unfortunately. The Combine is February 27th, and, free agency, is right around the corner. So you can't stop talking about football, that's for sure. If you guys have any questions, you guys can hit me up on email, ianbeckles@radioinfluence. And if you have any questions about football, go ahead and ask me or, whatever. Whatever questions are good. I just enjoy talking about football. If you want to follow me on social media, it's at Ian Beckles, IanBeckles. And other than that, I'm just going with the flow and looking to see what's happening in the news football-wise, because there's always things happening in the NFL. There's always things happening with our Buccaneers as well. So make sure you tune into In the Trenches every single week. Once again, thank you to Hess Spinal Centers for being the title sponsor. And everybody enjoy their week, please. And be safe. Peace out.
You have been In the Trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Here is Kevin Kennedy and Rich Herrera with an Inside the Dugout Quick Fix.
Cubs land the guy. The Dodgers were in on him, but Yu Darvish will be up with Joe Maddon at Wrigley Field. Let's talk about how Yu Darvish fits in with what the Chicago Cubs are all about, which is winning another championship.
You know, at first when I heard $150 million, I thought, wow, that's a pretty good deal for him. It's still a good deal, but he's got incentives in there. And I understand the incentives to get to 150 versus 126 guaranteed is that he has to win multiple Cy Young awards. That's one note that I heard yesterday. I was doing satellite radio yesterday, and that's what came across. That was the info that was given to us. So I don't know. I usually on incentives, Rich, you would think would be based on amount of starts, not innings anymore, because starters aren't allowed to go three times around the lineup, but. Based on starts, I thought it would be up because Yu Darvish has had a history of whether it be the Tommy John surgery or shoulder problems or even back problems. He's had a lot of issues throughout his career.
Inside the Dugout with Kevin Kennedy and Rich Herrera can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.